Wake up, everybody. Welcome into Redacted on this Monday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we tend to cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores. Why is a terrorist going to the White House today? Why did a terrorist with a $10 million bounty on his head just show up at the White House for a meeting with President Trump? We're going to talk about normalization.
Is he that much different than the normal clientele that visits the White House? Zelensky's been there.
Right.
Netanyahu's been there.
Jolani, we're talking about, of course, the new head of Syria, who was normalized by MI6 and the CIA, just showed up at the White House a few minutes ago.
Dick Cheney's been there. Right. So. I mean, we are opposed to this because he was on the wanted list. But now, hey, just normalize terror. That's what we always say on this show. I have a T-shirt. We're going to talk about Bidenomics, how it continues under President Trump. Remember, we were promised a whole different economy. We don't have that. Now, President Trump is going to bribe you into thinking that the economy is great. It's not. And we're going to take a bird's eye view at what it will actually do if we get these stimulus checks.
Yeah, $2,000 stimulus checks on the way. And also Zelensky, well, speaking of Zelensky and corruption, it just turns out there was a massive 15-month investigation into this clown's inner circle inside of Ukraine. And it turns out that they had been stealing hundreds of millions of U.S. dollars and euros and keeping it for themselves when there were rolling blackouts across Ukraine. And this money was meant to sort of help these blackouts, the energy infrastructure. But all of Zelensky's inner circle capturing hundreds of millions of dollars of your taxpayer dollars so they could live a lavish lifestyle. By the way, do you remember when Congress, Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene specifically put up a House bill that would have audited the money that was going into Ukraine? And Democrats called them Putin stooges. Like, this is a big gift for Putin. Really? Okay. Anyway, we'll talk about all of that and more as the show begins today. So let us know where you're joining us from around the world. Thank you guys so much for subscribing and being a part of our show. We're live every day at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So get your chats in now. I see tens of thousands of you in the chat room already. So great to see you guys.
Before we get started, we're going to talk about Bidenomics under Trump. We get the same, just sort of a different flavor. Buckle up for that. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Shopify. Because did you know how much e-commerce is built off of Shopify? Well, quite a lot, including the Redacted store. So if you go over to redacted.store, is it redactedstore.com? Sorry. You'll see that purple Shop Pay button. That means that the store that you're on is run on Shopify. That means that the people who run that store can rely on Shopify from graphic design, handling payments, shipping, fulfillment, all of it. They can do all the back end. So if you'd like to launch your store to the world, let Shopify take care of the details. It's easy. It's easy to make something beautiful that doesn't look like, I don't know, web 1.0. You don't have to really have an eye for graphic design or a talent. You just implement and they will help you every step of the way. Plus, they have round the clock customer support and care. If you get stuck, again, Shopify has advice. They have their award-winning 24/7 customer support. You'd be surprised how much of the web runs on Shopify. So if they can do it, you can too. Check them out at shopify.com/redacted. Sign up for a 1 month trial period today. They have everything you need to grow your business. Again, shopify.com/redacted. Also, I did not bring I should have brought my new shirt. We have a new shirt on the Redacted store. It says, be smarter than your algorithm. You probably noticed that when idiots fight with you about politics, it's because they are running off of their algorithm, things that the algorithm told them to be worked up about. You know better than that. So the saying, which I hope goes viral, be smarter than your algorithm can be found on the Redacted store. I will bring that shirt to you tomorrow. I brought it up. It's upstairs.
Will you wear it?
Yeah. I'm mic'd in. Can't show you right now. So check it out for yourself or we'll bring it tomorrow. Yes, I'll wear it.
I'll wear it too. I'll wear it.
We'll be twinsies. Okay.
That Someone said good. I look tired today. No, I just got a haircut.
That doesn't have anything to do with anything. We had our youngest had a little stomach flu over the weekend. And so
sleep this weekend around the Morris house.
We're
was not
both
very
a little
good.
Cranky. Yeah. And I think that I'm getting it. And by me saying that I'm going to get it means Clayton has it. Now, right now, that's how you make your husband sick.
Yeah, as soon as she says she's sick, then I'm feeling something in my throat all of a sudden.
I think I got what you have, and I'm like, shut up! It's not your turn! So we'll see who falls this week. I intend to be here all the week, so please stay with us. All right, well, President Trump is giving us Bidenomics all over again. New stimulus checks and a 50-year mortgage. What the heck? This is where we should all remember that it was, in fact, President Trump who handed out the first COVID stimulus money. And that led to inflation. We warned you then. We are saying it now. Now, a lot of people who like Trump for many reasons are saying, well, he had to. He was pressured by sort of the powers that be during the pandemic. Maybe, but he's not being pressured now. Why is he doing this? If we don't see that this is Bidenomics 2.0, we are fools. Now, what do we mean by Bidenomics? Well, during the Biden years, we got massive government handouts. The dollar crashed to support the war in Ukraine. And the White House was telling us all the while that the economy has never been better. We found that insulting when that happened then, which is why we find this insulting when President Trump is doing it now.
I'm pleased to report that today the United States has the strongest economy, the strongest borders, the strongest military, the strongest friendships, and the strongest spirit of any nation anywhere. We have the greatest economy right now. A lot of people don't see that. But if you look at what's happening with all the factories, AI, auto plants all over the country being built, that if you would have thought about that 2 or 3 years ago, you would have said it was the opposite. They're all leaving. Now they're all coming in. They're all coming back and then some. And I think that we can honestly say, and I think you're going to see it even more so over the next 12 months, that this is the golden age of America. This is the golden age.
Okay, well, you just don't see it yet, he says. If you don't see it now, you will eventually see it. So you need to just start seeing it.
Former Congressman Ron Paul took umbrage with that statement over the weekend, saying all this talk about a golden age, no. We're $38 trillion in debt. The housing market is being squeezed. Now we're seeing signs of a recession, as Treasury Secretary Scott Benson said this week, that we are already probably in a housing recession. So we're seeing massive layoffs. Where exactly is this golden age? I mean, I know that there are like MAGA influencers who are like, golden age is here. We're so back.
Raise your hand. What is different under President Trump? What is different? Because the economic policy is the same. Support war, massive debt, government expansion. Now, we get little breadcrumbs from the Department of Government Efficiency, like this DEI thing, this program in Mozambique or whatever. That's great. Those are to the tune of billions, not trillions, which is what our debt is. Now, over the weekend, President Trump said, things are so good, we're going to give out $2,000 checks, basically a dividend from our tariffs, because we just are breaking all these records. Today, he clarified that all of this money is from leftover. All the leftover money will go into, U.S. citizens, and it will pay down the national debt. So it's not like let's get ourselves out of debt first so that we don't continue to devalue the dollar and steal from savings accounts. No, it's let's give you this money and then whatever's left over will pay down the debt. The debt's not ever gone down. It's not going to go down. So he's leading us to believe that he can do that. Now, I want to remind you, let's rewind the clock 5 years, because when President Trump instituted the first COVID relief payout, economists were saying this is going to lead to inflation and devalue the dollar. Here is one of many people who were saying this from The Economist. They specifically predicted massive stimulus programs would be another potential source of inflation because governments around the world will borrow heavily to finance schemes, which is exactly what happened. Since this article was written, we've had inflation at 26%. Since this article, April of 2020, now all of our costs are up 26%. That means that if you took those three COVID stimulus checks of around $3,000 in 2020, it was a poison pill. Because now you took in $3,000, but your cost of living has gone up 26%. That's not a good deal. Who would vote for that deal? Who would take that deal now, knowing that next year and the year after, it's going to get worse and worse for you? That was predicted. That has happened. So if you cash a $2,000 dividend check now, have we learned nothing? What will happen? You want another 26%? How about we go another round? Because where, Clayton, does that money come from?
Well, first of all, we're borrowing it.
Nowhere. Right. Exactly.
Exactly. So this is all phony money. So someone in the chat room said, oh, TDS channel, I'm out of here. No, I like President Trump very much, and he's been great to my family. But on this issue, on taking tariff money and funneling it out in the form of checks as some sort of a dividend check, when we're $38 trillion in debt and we just sent another round of billions into Ukraine, for crying out loud. Like, we need to stop this boondoggle right now. We are America First on this channel. And we sort of align really, you know, with Thomas Massey and Ron Paul on making sure that our American spending stays here in the United States. It's not being sent out around the world in the form of ridiculous sort of stipend checks.
That's such a stupid comment. It's not personality based at all. We felt this way during Trump 1.0. We felt this way during Biden. We feel this way during Trump. It's just the economist.
The fake printing of money.
The numbers, stupid.
The fake printing of money.
Has absolutely nothing to do with Trump's personality.
At the heart of it, of course, is the Federal Reserve and the fake printing of money and a money system that is absolutely corrupt. And these guys are totally corrupt. And it's illegal what the Federal Reserve is doing. So you just want to send out, first of all, they don't even want us sending out paper checks. They want us all to be sending out digital ID checks so that we're all putting on central bank digital currency and that we can control everything. That's what they really want at the heart of all of this. Is total
and if we're
control.
Talking about derangement syndrome and our feelings, we did think maybe during Trump 2.0, the shackles would be off and he would make more drastic fiscal changes, such as ending the Federal Reserve or more pro-business type things or more shrinking of the size of the government. He's done none of that. So it has nothing to do with personality. This is not an indictment on who he is as a person. This is us collectively having to live the Trump administration, which makes life harder and is a theft from the working class. So take that TDS comment and shove it up your ass. Okay, let's now talk about the 50-year mortgage. I hate the idea right away. Now, mortgages is something Clayton and I absolutely geek out about. We, in fact, have a book about it, How to Pay Down Your Mortgage in 5 years. Our entire work is around shrinking the mortgage to 5 years, not expanding it to 50 years. So you're talking to the person who already hates this idea, wants to get you out of debt faster, not slower. Even scarier is that the 50-year mortgage idea was floated in this post by President Trump, comparing himself to Franklin Roosevelt, which makes me want to fall out of my chair. The worst president in history, full stop. The history book adoration of him is propaganda. I'm going to prove that to you. Now, a 50-year mortgage is also a poison pill. It's about as wise as building your own house with no carpentry experience. Let's just look at the quick back of the napkin math on this. A 30-year mortgage on a $500,000 home at a 6% interest, which is what we've got around today, is about $460,000 in interest alone. So that puts that house at close to $1 million, even though you think it's $500,000. Well, if we extend that by 20 years, a 50-year mortgage would have $860,000 over the life of that loan in interest. That's almost tripling the price of the house. Why would you think that that is helping to mean people don't own their homes and they're in debt longer? Now, let's look at the 30-year mortgage, because it in and of itself is not an awesome financial product. In fact, this was introduced during the Roosevelt administration. And guess what happened? The price of homes skyrocketed and the Federal Reserve was given the power to manipulate the market. Pervert is the word I like better than manipulate. That's exactly what they do. Now, in the 1920s, prior to the 30-year mortgage, the average house cost about $6,000. By the 50s, once the 30-year mortgage had taken hold as the standard way to buy a house, the average home cost $30,000. That means that home prices quadrupled because of the extending of the debt, because of this 30-year mortgage scheme. So that will happen. Before that, Americans had to save about 40 to 50% down, and banks would give them a short-term note. They were not a slave for their entire life. That was never a thing, which was good for two reasons. One, people didn't buy things they couldn't afford. And two, the price of homes was kept low. Once the American home was purchased with mostly debt, housing prices exploded. And since then, housing prices have risen more than 400% in real terms and over 2,000% in nominal dollars. So what will a 50-year mortgage do? I'll tell you what it won't do. It will not bring down the price of homes, which is what this was intended to do, make it so that young people can buy a home. It will not bring the price down. It will send the price up, but it will make young people a slave to their mortgage for longer. So who benefits? The bank and the Federal Reserve. Now, anyone who romanticizes President Roosevelt is, in my book, not a serious person or a serious student of history. Roosevelt was the template for government expansion, consumer debt, slavery of the American people and massive power grabs. Oh, but people say, no, he was a hero, the New Deal. Read this book and get back to me about that New Deal nonsense. A careful study of the Great Depression will not leave you warm fuzzies for Roosevelt. Here's a reminder about Roosevelt that you should keep in mind when President Trump romanticizes him. One, Roosevelt put Japanese in concentration camps. He stole gold from Americans and then marked up the price once it was in the hands of the government. He proposed a 99% tax rate. He was only stopped that from Congress. He gave himself so much power that the Supreme Court started ruling against him over and over and over again. And then he threatened to pack the court and they stopped. And then he continued to do what he wanted unchecked. After his inauguration, he declared a bank holiday and launched what was known as the 100 days, which was a record-breaking outpouring of all of this legislation and more. What you see on your screen now is all of the things that gave the government power. And due to this overreach, it made Washington, D.C. the largest employer and financier in the nation. Basically, he put the government into every sector of American life. He is the reason that the government has now the power to control every person and industry. There is also evidence that he ignored warnings about Pearl Harbor, leading the American people into war. And one more thing that should make you extremely uncomfortable about this comparison of FDR is that he did not leave office. He ran for a third term. He won it. He was intending to keep that power. He only lost it because he died. It is because of him that we have the 22nd Amendment. So again, knowing all of this about FDR, how do you feel about President Trump asking to have a template of his legacy? How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm not happy about it. Someone in the chat room, like Mr. Mike says, but false statement, Natalie, you can pay off your 50-year fixed mortgage whenever you want or refi. What the F? Yeah, but that's not the point. The point is that most people are not going to. Like, if you're into a 30-year mortgage, the whole reason you go for the 30-year is because you can presumably get the lower interest rate, right? And then you're going to stay with that mortgage for many, many years. What's the incentive? If you think that you've got like a bag of cash laying around, like, why wouldn't you pay it off?
Buy the house outright.
Right. Why wouldn't you buy it outright? So if you've got like bags of cash laying around like Zelensky, then you would put that towards the house. But if you don't have that money, then that's why you want that lower interest rate. And that's why you want that lower monthly payment. So you can be locked in for 50 years, but you don't actually own the house. You're just basically renting it from the bank. And then on top of that, of course, we've got property taxes, which is, if you want to go the other direction, like, look what Ron DeSantis is doing. Say what you will about Ron DeSantis, but like, look what he's trying to do in Florida. Go the opposite direction, right? Which is make you actually own a home. So get rid of property taxes so that you're actually not paying the government on a regular basis. You're basically renting your land from the government. The moment you stop paying it, sorry, they'll come and take it from you.
Right.
Same with, you know, cars and other things. So if you don't make the car payment, guess what? The repos are skyrocketing right now, by the way. So we are being crushed. This is, to me, is not the answer at all. 50-year mortgage. What we should do is build more homes. Take the government regulations away from builders so we can actually have a boom in building in this country. We don't have enough properties. We have, how many millions of homes shortage are we right now? We are in a housing deficit across the United States because we don't have homes. There's all these restrictions on building. There's all these regulations on building right now. So we can't do it. So maybe remove some of the regulations, allow builders to build, allow individuals to be able to move through a mortgage process way more quickly. It's incredibly onerous right now. And
maybe stop letting BlackRock buy up properties.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the other thing. It's like they don't want individual home ownership, right? That's the thing. They don't really want us owning anything. So if they can like not have us own the homes and just have the banks own the homes, they're totally fine with that. So this is like a boondoggle for Wall Street. Make no mistake about it. I have huge problems with this.
I haven't seen anybody celebrate this. Like, absolutely more and longer debt.
No one on the right, no one on the right that we respect anyway, is celebrating this. And those sort of MAGA influencers that are like our access journalists are keeping their mouth shut about this because they know this is a disaster. But no one on the right that we respect at all, who's like truly conservative, supports this at all. In fact, it's a total joke and everyone can see right through. I was just talking to a construction friend of mine just this afternoon. He was here at the house and he said 50-year mortgages. He's like, that's not home ownership. That's renting. It's ridiculous. And he's a huge Trump supporter. So all that to say, this is not going over well.
What about liberals? Do they like it or no, because they like homelessness?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what liberals think. I don't really tap into the liberal ideology. Liberals don't want you to be a part, you know, they don't want you to own anything. They don't want you to be part of the American dream. They don't want you to have home ownership. They want you to work multiple jobs. So I don't know that that's...
And they love the government.
They love government.
Except the Trump government. So I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not tapped in. The algorithm doesn't show me this. Now that I'm saying it out loud...
What do you guys
show
think
me
about
what
this?
Liberals think?
Let's see in the chat room
about
here.
Mortgages.
Let's see in the Rumble rants here. Anybody on Rumble? Thank you, Clayton. Ark River says, thank you, Clayton. Removing power from home builders and putting it back in the hands of citizens is what we need to right this ship. It's a 50-year lease, V. Gregory says. Dave Ramsey would be for this. Noel says Dave Ramsey would be for this. Who came up with a 50-year mortgage idea and the 2K stimulus checks? Whoever that is, Trump needs to fire immediately. Well, I just don't understand how you're going to hand out $2,000 tariff stimulus checks when we're $38 trillion in debt. Like, the math doesn't add up. It's unsustainable. The idea was that all of these tariffs are supposed to bring manufacturing back to the United States. It's also supposed to fill up our coffers once again with an enormous inflow of money into the United States. That's why we're low. That's why we're devaluing the U.S. dollar, by the way. Like, that's the whole point of devaluing the U.S. dollar and making it easier for these countries right now to want to invest in the United States and put money in the United States. So it doesn't add up at all. $2,000 checks when you should be actually paying down our massive debt right now.
Right. And this comment says, we'll just refinance it later. You're missing the point of what this will do to everybody, because those tools were available during the housing crisis of 2007. You were getting into cheap mortgages, sometimes mortgages you did not qualify for, interest-only mortgages. And the lenders thought, well, this person will refinance when the housing cost goes up and then they'll be okay. People A did not do that, but what it did to the rest of us is that housing prices crashed and then now they're artificially high. So yes, you can play the market. What it does to the rest of us will increase the price of housing. So even if you're smarter than most, what it does economically, the fallout, it will make another insolvent housing crisis. And we will all have to live through that. So that's only a solution for you, not for all of us.
Swivelhead Medic in our chat room says, thank you for the $5 super chat, says, I did 40-year subprime mortgages in the early 2000s. Look where that led.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's about what it does to all of us, not are you smart enough to play. Sure, plenty of people are. Trump did, right? He did great with all of his investment mortgages. That's great for some. It's not great for all. So for a leader to be saying this, knowing that housing prices will go up, that will just put our next generation into financial concentration camp.
Swivelhead Medic says, I'll believe it when I see it. I'm still waiting on my $5,000 Doge check. Yeah, remember they were going to cut like Doge checks to the American people too, with all the waste, fraud, and abuse that we discovered, and then like Elon got pushed out, and that where'd that go? News and Preps, $10 super chat says, you never own your home. Why? Property tax. You don't pay. They steal your home. Same with your car registration. And you don't pay tickets and they impound you. You are a slave. All right. Keep letting us know what you think about this. Maybe, David, we can put up a poll about do you like 50-year mortgages? We'll have to put it up on our YouTube channel because Rumble doesn't allow polls right now. So.
All right. Well, since we're talking about mortgages, now is a good time to tell you about our friends at American Financing, because the Fed did just drop interest rates. And that's great news for American homeowners, because if you're feeling overwhelmed about the upcoming holidays, well, there's no time than now to get your finances in order. It's hard to think about the holidays when everything's really expensive and your credit cards are already pushed to the max. But now is a great time to pay off that debt. American Financing is helping homeowners like you access the equity in their home for instant savings. Again, you wouldn't have any equity in your home if you had a 50-year mortgage, but thankfully we don't have those right now. So whatever you have in equity is yours. You can use it however you'd like, and American Financing can help teach you that. They're saving the average customer $800 a month. Many people seen rates in the low fives, and that's a game changer when you compare that to high-interest credit cards. If you start today, you also can delay two mortgage payments right during the holidays. It costs absolutely nothing to find out how much you can save. The holidays will be here before you know it, so don't wait. Call their salary-based mortgage consultants today, 866-890-8434, or go to AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. One more time, that's AmericanFinancing.net/redacted.
Well, 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 it turns out that Ukrainian dictator Zelensky and his inner circle are wildly corrupt. Who could have seen this coming? Oh, yeah, we did years ago on this show, the lavish cars we reported on, the homes they were buying with oceanfront views. We covered all of it. No one did anything about it. No one did anything to stop it. Well, 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 turns out someone has finally trying to stop it, at least. Word this morning that Zelensky's business partner and his justice minister and many other allies close to Zelensky have been implicated in a massive money laundering scheme using U.S. tax dollars meant to defend their energy infrastructure. Shocking. They found bags of dollars and euros, estimated they stole more than $100 million. Look at these all nicely wrapped and shrink wrapped U.S. dollars, all sent to Ukraine. You can see where it's even coming from. Atlanta, Kansas City, Federal Reserve, like just shipping it out to them. Okay. So I just want to read from the report this afternoon and quote it specifically. Ukraine's top anti-corruption authorities on Monday searched properties linked to senior government officials and a former business partner of Vladimir Zelensky as part of a sweeping investigation into alleged graft in the country's energy sector. News of the probe came amid escalating Russian aerial assaults on Ukraine's energy infrastructure that have led to rolling blackouts and growing anger at Ukrainian authorities for failing to protect power facilities. If only they had money in which to protect these power facilities. Oh, wait, they did, but they stole it all. The alleged scheme involved kickbacks from contractors hired to build fortifications to defend energy infrastructure against Russian missiles and drones. So they were hired to protect the citizens from these rolling blackouts and the problems with the energy infrastructure, but they stole the money instead. It will add to concerns among Ukraine's chief partners that the country needs to tackle graft as it seeks billions more dollars in Western support for its war effort and economy. Yeah, you think? Oh, so you want us to send you more billions? Yet you're stealing our money, putting it in your pockets. Hundreds of millions of dollars just in your multiple homes. Shrink-wrapped, I guess, in your closet so that you can take these lavish trips and buy things overseas, buy houses in Spain, Mallorca, wherever else. It's unbelievable. So what's amazing is that Ukrainians have been dealing with these rolling blackouts. The money was supposed to help them stop any of these blackouts. In other words, these corrupt officials stole money that was meant to keep the lights on for its citizens. I mean, they don't care, because these are the same scumbags, by the way, that will round up young men, throw them into paddy wagons, and have drive them off to the front lines of a war that they're not prepared to fight, nor do they want to. And then they'll be killed, thrown into the meat grinder, because they don't care. They don't care about Ukrainians at all. They care about lining their own pockets. Oh, and by the way, you want to join the EU? No, we've nipped our corruption in the bud. Sure you have. So the most corrupt government in all of Europe wants to join the European Union. But honestly, this is our fault in the United States for funding these corrupt bastards in the first place. We've known that Ukraine is the most corrupt country in Europe. Remember back, by the way, when Congress wouldn't vote to allow us to audit all of that money that Biden and the Democrats were sending to Ukraine and the neocons. So Congress was trying to step in on this and trying to push forth an audit. I remember it. And they voted against it. Here it is. House GOP breaks with Democrats over audit of U.S. funds for Ukraine. What I love is when Congressman Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene introduced the bill, Democrats crapped all over it, saying it would be a gift to Putin. It's a gift to Putin for us to audit our own money? Okay. Here at the time, House Democrats said the measure would undermine strong bipartisan support for robust assistance to Ukraine to fend off Russia's more than year-long war of aggression against that country. Representative Kathy Manning of North Carolina, this person should be voted out of office. Is this person still in office? Oh my God, get her out of there. Fire her ass. She said she called the measure divisive and ill-advised and said it was a partisan political ploy at the height of legislative irresponsibility that jeopardizes U.S. national security in partnership with European allies and Ukraine. The height of legislative irresponsibility? These people in Congress are corrupt as hell. I'd be curious if Representative Manning got any kickbacks for this, that type of position. Did she receive any good campaign money? Because all of this corrupt money was flowing from Democrats through USAID and all of these NGOs flowing into Ukraine, flowing right into the back pockets of these corrupt Democrats.
Well, what if I use this excuse not to pay my taxes because the government's corrupt? I should not be expected to keep my finances in order to pay into a corrupt government because that's irresponsible. I have other things to do. You know, I have to get my nails done.
It just blows my mind that it's coming full circle, because when we first covered this, it was like a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. It just blew my mind because the issue they were having was not the money they were sending. It was that they wanted it audited. They wanted to know where this money was going. And that was what people were saying. Well, this is a gift to Putin. Like, well, hang on, time out. Like, we just want to know where this money is going. And that's what they fought against. And now what are we looking at? Now we know. Yeah, we could have caught this with an audit.
Yeah. So then they should not be able to audit me.
Oh, good. Kathy Manning is gone. Okay, good. She's gone.
Right. Well, by this. So then why are we not held to the same standards as Ukraine? Why?
Because that would be a gift to Putin. Aren't you paying attention? It'd be a gift to Putin. Mm-hmm. Here's what she said specifically. Passage of this measure would represent a gift to Putin and his Kremlin cronies and provide visibility into the plans of our military and intelligence leaders strive to protect at all costs. What the hell? Therefore, we must reject it. So it's somehow by us auditing our money is giving away state secrets about our military?
Mm.
Really? But it's a gift to Putin. Okay.
Again, when they look at my finances, they get a secret into what I spend my money on when I file my taxes.
Yeah.
So, okay. Ukraine gets better treatment than U.S. citizens.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then when pressed on that point, this dipshit former member of Congress, Kathy Manning, doubled down, gaslit all of us, quote, "We're in a war. Children are dying. Maternity hospitals are being blown to smithereens by a depraved sociopath in the Kremlin." That's been debunked, by the way, of course. We know that was a fake talking point. This is no time to send any signal to those brave people that we waver one iota in our ongoing support. So we cannot have any accounting of our money whatsoever. Turns out that money being stolen by Zelensky's inner circle and lining their pockets so they could go on lavish trips and buy expensive houses and cars, all with your money. But, you know, this is a gift to Putin, so we can't check this money at all. All right. And by the way, I love that the idea and these articles are sort of written around this idea that Zelensky's not also dirty as hell and tied to all of this while his wife is like flying around on private jets and doing expensive shopping trips. Where are they getting that money from? We're getting it from you guys, from all of us. But Zelensky, apparently, he's a golden boy here. He has he has nothing to do with any of this. It's just his entire inner circle is all corrupt.
It's really too bad.
I didn't know.
He hasn't been able to fix that.
I didn't know that there was... I didn't know that Sergey... Sergey has five new houses. I had no idea. Where did he suddenly get all that money from? Go ahead.
I'm just... Now I'm really curious because I think before we covered this, before this happened... They were also fighting against an audit of the weapons we were sending and where they were going. And we saw that they were getting shipped in through Greece. Like, I'm just curious what conflict is upcoming that we haven't found out about yet that we're going to all of a sudden see all of these trafficked weapons a part of.
Yeah.
That's coming.
Well, maybe that's why Giuliani was in the White House today, so he could get all of this additional trafficked weapons into Ukraine. He can use it in Syria now to kill more Christians. So maybe that's what will happen. Because it all comes full circle every time all these weapons go missing. Guess what? Now they're suddenly in the hands of the cartel in Mexico that we need to bomb. So that's how all of this works. All right. Well, we've got more news to get to here on your Monday. We're going to talk about the terrorist himself, Giuliani, just arriving at the White House. They actually, it was hilarious. They brought him in through the back door. They were hoping like people wouldn't see it. They brought him through like the back door, the back gate. But then like when he left, he was like out in the streets, like doing a parade. Like he just won an inauguration. He's walking down the streets and there's people lining the streets cheering him on. Like this is, we're literally meeting with a former ISIS terrorist in the White House.
Cool.
Okay. So what the hell is happening? Yeah. All right. Fine by that. All right. We got more news. We're going to get to that in a second. But first, you know, Fed just, of course, dropped interest rates again, saying the consumer slowdown is real. There are alarm bells going all over right now on this economy. From the housing sector, we are entering a recession on the housing sector. Those aren't my words. Those are the words of Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, who says we're already in a recession in the housing sector. We're also dealing with now, of course, a devaluation of the U.S. dollar. We are dealing with sky-high prices across the board for food, for groceries, for just about everything. Obviously, rent is continuing to go up. So people are suffering, and there are significant problems right now on the consumer spending side. People are saying, hey, I don't have money to buy just about anything right now. And this is about a further erosion of the U.S. dollar. So when I tell you about gold and silver, think like, oh, but I don't have any money for any of that. It's about wealth preservation at this point. I don't care that gold goes up. I don't care that silver has gone up. For me, it's about making sure you're protecting what money maybe you do have in savings right now against this inflation, against this collapsing U.S. dollar, against all of it. And that's where our friends at Lear Capital can help you. So again, I want you to give them a call. Just get on the phone with them. 1-800-613-3557 is the place to go, or visit the website, learredacted.com. That's the place to go. And just have a conversation with them. Again, this is not like buying stocks or something else where you're like hoping it's going to skyrocket. For me, like if you've got $100 in US dollars, I'd want to convert it to a stable asset that is outside of all of this government corruption and government of printing of money. Again, it's wonderful that gold has gone up in value, but that's not why we invest in it. We do it simply for wealth preservation, to protect ourselves. It's sustained for 5,000 years. And I just want you to start thinking about it in those terms. You might be saying, I don't have any money for this. But if you've got money in savings, or you've got an old 401k that's sitting there, can you convert it over to a precious metals self-directed IRA where you have checkbook control of it and Wall Street does not? So just protecting yourself in the same way that you would protect your house in the event of like an EMP attack, or, you know, prepping to make sure you've got food on hand in your house. Like, you do not want this to be devalued anymore. So give them a call. They're great friends of the show. And I think it's really important to start thinking about doing this. 1-800-613-3557 to get your free guide, have a conversation with them on the phone, or just go to learredacted.com. And again, I think it's worth just having a conversation with them about what you can do to protect your family going forward as we head into these, what I think is a really, really dark time right now on the consumer side. And just for people who are not rich, for people who are not incredibly wealthy, middle class or lower middle class, who just want to protect the little savings that they do have, it's time is now to, you know, pay attention to all of this. All right. What was happening here while we were flying around?
All right. Well, President Trump is threatening to sue the BBC, which normally would not bother me because I hate all corporate media. But once you see that he's using it to run cover for Israel, you want to take a pause and be like, wait, what is this? Is the BBC corrupt? Sure. Yeah, they were horrible during the pandemic. They have been selling the Ukraine war ad nauseum. They have been unable to see who is actually killing people in Gaza. They're the worst. Absolutely. What the issue is around Trump was a BBC documentary, which was edited to make it sound like President Trump incited violence on January 6th, like he was actually calling for violence and then going forward the way it was edited. Sure, absolutely. Was dishonest. But now two senior executives have resigned, and they are saying, well, you know, we don't think there's bias, but it's time for us to go. And they're grappling with whether or not they might, in fact, have to contend with a lawsuit from the Trump administration. So what does this have to do with Israel? Well, that's what I thought when I saw the Israeli embassy in the UK release this statement. Basically, they're saying they're glad that the two people at the BBC are gone because the BBC has been unfair to Israel. Ironically enough, I don't follow this account. It was surfaced to me in my X feed. Why do you think that is? It's a manipulation. If I don't follow them, but I'm being told I need to see this in the context of media manipulation. Well, this became clearer when White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt this weekend said this about the BBC and the way they cover Israel. And ask yourself while you watch this clip, why'd she have that printout at the ready to talk about the BBC? Watch.
Firing on Palestinians trying to get aid from the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. Up to 20 people, according to the Red Cross, have arrived to the hospital that they've set up with gunshot wounds, have died from them. Is this administration aware of these? And I mean, what is being done to address this situation?
The administration is aware of those reports, and we are currently looking into the veracity of them because, unfortunately, unlike some in the media, we don't take the word of Hamas with total truth. We like to look into it when they speak, unlike the BBC, who had multiple headlines. They wrote, Israeli tank kills 26, Israeli tank kills 21, Israeli gunfire kills 31, Red Cross says 21 people were killed in an aid incident, and then, oh wait, they had to correct and take down their entire story, saying we reviewed the footage and couldn't find any evidence of anything. Oh. Okay, so we're going to look into reports before we confirm them from this podium or before we take action. And I suggest that journalists who actually care about truth do the same to reduce the amount of misinformation that's going around the globe on this front. John.
Okay, that's false, what she's saying. The article does remain online, and those changed casualty numbers were updated. And again, the U.S. administration has plenty of proof that Israel has been targeting civilians at aid centers, has since this summer. So she says, well, we'll look into it. When are we going to get to hear what they have to say if they're not going to trust the BBC? Now, the message from the White House seems to be, see, you can't trust anything from this report. Not about Trump, not about Israel. Can't trust them. So by merging the BBC's alleged anti-Trump bias, which is real, with accusations of anti-Israel bias, which does not seem to me to be real, they create this clean narrative that the media is corrupt, the West's enemies are our enemies, and Trump, and by extension Israel, is the victim of the same dishonest press. What that tells me is that there are other things the BBC has reported that the White House does not want to look at. For instance, this report over the late summer, which should have been global outrage, but was instead kind of downplayed about how the BBC saw just how many Palestinian children under 12 were killed with sniper bullets to the head and chest. This is not, oops, they accidentally were blown up in attacks on Hamas. These are no children targeted. There's video that I'm choosing not to show you right now, but I linked to it in the newsletter, and it's horrible. So this is a detail, again, that should spark outrage, but now the White House is like, the BBC has media bias. We don't have to see this. That's always been the brilliance, though, about when Trump yells fake news. He is right. There is a lot of fake news, but then he should not catch that blowback to frame the narrative because he hasn't earned the narrative of being a truth teller. That's the game, though. That's brilliant, is make every criticism about the media until the real victims disappear. So let us know what you think about this move to discredit the BBC and by extension, see, they're just unfair to Israel. It's crazy, right? This is our own government running a propaganda protection campaign. And
well, yeah. Like Harrison, our chair, Harrison Buckhart says, there it is. You have the photos. The world must know about this.
Yeah.
Because then they play that. Oh, but children are used to carry explosives. So we just shoot them in the head. Okay.
4-year-olds.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we just shoot children in the head. Right. Okay. Sure. All right. We've got more news to get to. We're going to talk about a terrorist at the White House. Just meeting with President Trump a short time ago. And, you know, this is all part of a CIA MI6 plan to normalize this guy. You know, when he was in U.S. custody for 5 years, like, it's amazing. I'd be curious, like, what kind of fly on the wall conversations were being had at the time when MI6 and the CIA were basically trying to normalize this guy. Hey, we're going to let you out of prison. But eventually you are going to become the leader of Syria and you're going to work with us. You're going to be our puppet. This is how this whole thing is going to work. Okay. Okay. So that's how this all is going to come together. We'll talk about all of that in a moment. But first, did you know that the U.S. life expectancy peaked at 78 years old back in 2014? Yeah, it's been going down ever since. Global life expectancy declining for the first time in 30 years because people are aging faster than ever before. This is due to more toxins in the air, chemicals in our soil, food, other external factors that are new to us. But what most people don't know is we can actually fight against it at the cellular level. Scientists discovered that kimchi actually slows the aging process of human cells. It helps protect them, delay aging at the cellular level. The power of nature can outweigh the power of pharmaceuticals without the nasty side effects. And by the way, you can get all of the benefits of kimchi. Like, if you don't like the taste of kimchi, some people don't like fermented cabbage, whatever. I love it. I know Philip loves it, but some people are like, yeah, I don't like that. Well, guess what? You get all of the benefits of kimchi in a simple capsule with our friends at Kimchi One. Each capsule delivers over 900 probiotic strains, plus antioxidants and enzymes that support your digestion, your metabolism, and skin health from the inside out. As we age, we become more susceptible to microbial threats. Kimchi One is a natural antimicrobial, helping your body fight off harmful bacteria, viruses, even toxins, while boosting immunity and energy. Best of all, Kimchi One is 100% made in the U.S., all natural, non-GMO. Support your gut, protect your cells, and feel younger every day with Kimchi One from our friends at Brightcore. So right now, you can get an exclusive offer by clicking the link below, mybrightcore.com/redacted, for 25% off your entire order, or even better, call them. If you call them, you'll get 50% off. 50% off your order and free shipping. Give them a call right now at 888-404-6312. Up to 50% off and free shipping. I take it every day as part of my supplements. I would not be able to live without it. So thanks to Kimchi One and our friends at Brightcore for supporting the show. Well, today is the 250th birthday of the United States Marine Corps. Happy birthday, United States Marines. And what better way to celebrate all of their sacrifice than by inviting a wanted terrorist to the White House to meet with President Trump? Where are all the pro-Zionist, pro-Israel shills who always warn us about Islamists infiltrating our country? Here he is. Here's the $10 million reward for Jilani. I don't see Ben Shapiro complaining about all of this. I don't see all the guys that are like, how can we allow these Islamists in our country? There's cells all over the place right now. But we just invite one of them to the White House? Okay. I don't see Mark Levin complaining about it. Here's a guy who literally has a $10 million bounty on his head from our government for being a terrorist, killing Christians, Alawites, Druze, etc., children. And he's at the White House because he's our new puppet leader of Syria. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene posted this a short time ago. She said, the new leader of Syria is a former al-Qaeda terrorist wanted by our government who is meeting with the President Trump today at the White House on the U.S. Marines' 250th anniversary. He rose to power in December 2024. Sanctions were lifted off of Syria in June, and many Christians and minority groups have been killed before and after sanctions were lifted. Syria is the oldest home of Christianity outside of Israel. The Apostle Paul met Jesus on the road to Damascus. I pray the persecution ends not only in Syria, but all around the world. Now look at this. He arrived by the back door of the White House. They wouldn't even bring him in the front. So they arrived by the back door of the White House, and some cameras were able to capture him getting out of the SUV there. But normally he would come in the front. They would have like the color guard would be welcoming him, praising him. Maybe there even be some music playing. Nothing. They brought him in through the back door like a little rat. Then when he's inside meeting with Congressman Brian Mast and others. Here's some photos inside. Congressman Brian Mast, who you may recall, of course, formerly wearing like an IDF shirt, walking around the halls of Congress in an Israeli IDF shirt. friend of the show, Kavor Kalmasian, one of the great journalists in the world, posted this a short time ago. If you still can't see what's happening between Jelani and the U.S. and Israel after this photo shoot with Brian Mast, then honestly, even God himself won't be able to save you. That's right about that. We invited Syrian journalist Kavor Kalmasian on the show to talk about all of this. Kavor, great to see you as always, my friend.
Thank you so much for having me, Clayton.
This is a really dark day. I mean, it's, you know, just on the one hand, on the 250th anniversary of the U.S. Marines and U.S. soldiers who sacrificed their lives, who were sold a bill of goods about why they were going to fight these guys in the Middle East. And here we're welcoming one of their leaders right into the White House to, you know, get some nice food and hang out with the President of the United States. It's a really dark day.
Well, Clayton, I have friends in the United States who served in Iraq twice under the banner of fighting against terrorism. They went into Afghanistan. They came back physically and mentally injured. They are still suffering from PTSD. And I can see their activism nowadays on social media platforms. And I don't want to put myself in their shoes. But if I were in their shoes, I would feel betrayed by the officials and the politicians and the planners in the United States. Because from the early days of the war against Syria, and why I call it a war against Syria, because this was an orchestrated and engineered CIA regime change war against Syria. And in 2012, it was quite clear from the emails of Hillary Clinton when Jake Sullivan sent an email to Hillary Clinton saying Al-Qaeda is on our side in Syria. And then the Defense Intelligence Agency of the United States sent a report to Barack Obama telling him that the driving force behind the insurgency against Assad are Al-Qaeda in Iraq, are the jihadists, the Salafists, and the Muslim Brotherhood. And knowing that, Obama put his signature on Operation Timber Sycamore, meaning he gave the permission for the CIA to arm and train these multinational Takfiri jihadists in the country. And the outcome of this regime change war was basically that Jelani, who was the founder of the Al-Qaeda offshoot in Syria, is now the de facto president of the country. But he selected himself, or probably the CIA and the MI6 selected him, to lead this the transitional period in the country, because they needed someone who could do a few things, one of which is to strike strategic agreements and with neighboring countries, and especially with Israel, meaning that he wants to give up on the Golan Heights and on Mount Hermon, in those are Syrian territories, for Israel in exchange for a security deal with the Israelis. He will also open the markets, of course, for all the multinational corporations, and he will get a loan from the IMF. Today also he met with the head of the IMF. And accordingly, this means that the Syrian economy will turn into a privatized franchise for the multinational corporations and these loans that they will give to Syria, which means after Jelani, whoever comes, the Syrian economy will be hostage for these loans and Syria will be forever in debt. And that means whoever comes next will continue revolving in the orbit of the planners in the United States.
This is a great point because, I mean, this is very similar to what's happening in Ukraine, right? So Ukraine is now a vassal state. I mean, all of these multinational corporations basically own Ukraine, right? No one really owns the Ukrainian people don't own that country anymore. It's been sold off as part of all of these IMF loans, World Bank loans, etc. They will forever be indebted to these multinationals. We'll give you minerals, et cetera, for the rest of eternity. Well, I think the United Kingdom just paid off their loans to the United States for our involvement in World War II. Like, that's how long it took to pay back these monies. So this turns Syria basically into what? Into like a vassal state of these multinational corporations who just will have mineral rights to Syria, basically?
Just for context, just 1 year before the war, Syria had $7 billion external debt. That was around 12% of the total GDP, which was around 60 billion USD. But most of this debt was from the days of the Soviet Union, and nobody was asking Syria to pay this debt. So practically, Syria had zero foreign debt to the outside world. And that was really problematic in the region because the Syria's GDP was increasing exponentially during the 2005 and 2010, and its economy was growing, but based on a national economy, which means the Syrians were working and Syrians were producing and Syrians were exporting. But in a globalized world nowadays, especially that it is not allowed any longer for countries to enjoy a certain level of sovereignty, especially on their economic sector, this meant that they had to destroy the Syrian economy and suck the country dry. And now the corporations take over the reconstruction of the country. You're talking about $200 to $300 billion investments in the country. And that's why one of the conditions that the US and Britain were telling to Jolani that he cannot allow for the Chinese companies to come to Syria, and one of which are the telecommunication companies, right? And the other thing is that the Americans are going to establish bases in the country. Now, they have agreed to build or to have a military presence in Damascus because the Americans want to follow up on a potential anticipated security deal with Israel. Now, this is a very important point, Clayton, because I've seen, for example, Laura Loomer was showing some anger that Donald Trump received Jolani. And I think this is a very fake outrage because if
thank you for saying that, by the way, because I saw her saying this. She's like, I'm upset this terrorist coming to the, you know, this guy Jolani's coming to the White House. But it's why do you think it's fake?
Because first of all, she doesn't mention at all the direct role of Netanyahu and his government in overthrowing the previous regime in Syria.
Bingo.
And allowing Jolani to come and take over Damascus. Jolani basically cruised from Aleppo to Damascus, 400 kilometers on the highway, and nobody stopped him. Meanwhile, all the air forces were in the skies of Syria. If Israel wanted to eliminate Jolani, if Israel saw Jolani a threat to its national security, they would have eliminated him. Remember, in the past 2 years, they killed the entire leadership of Hezbollah because they presented and posed a threat to Israel. They killed the leadership of Hamas, even inside Iran, because they posed a threat for Israel. But they don't see Jolani as a threat because from the beginning, whatever happened in the Buqqa camp in Iraq, this is a very big question mark because nowadays, the former head of CIA, who is leading the CENTCOM nowadays, he's playing basketball with Jolani in Damascus. But Jolani ended up in the same Buqqa camp in Iraq when the head of CENTCOM back then was the head of the CIA. So there are lots of questions if they groomed Jolani in Iraq and then they sent him to Syria to lead this insurgency against Assad. Because from the beginning, I mean, Clayton, who is going to fight against the secular regime? Do you think the leftist will say, I'm going to wear a suicide vest for Marx or for Lenin, or some secular person is going to drive a suicide car or a car bomb and blow up itself? No. Those are the Takfiri jihadists who will carry out this type of fighting against a secular regime because they see it an infidel regime. So they took the opportunity, and in the words of Hillary Clinton, if you remember, she said about the Afghanistan war, we had a brilliant idea, and that idea was arming these jihadists back then in Afghanistan. So they copied the same strategy in Syria. They armed these jihadists, and now they reach to power. And once they reach to power, they are showing goodwill to the U.S., to their basically handlers in the U.S. and in Israel. But there is one small, in my opinion, disagreement, or there is a rift, it seems, in the U.S. administration nowadays, how to deal with Jolani in the future. Some voices in the U.S. administration, like Tom Barrack, continue saying that everything should be in the hands of Jolani. One centralized regime, Jolani controls everything. And this is the wish of Qatar, Turkey, and Saudi Arabia. But Israel has a different approach. Israel wants for Jolani to continue leading certain parts of Syria, and those are in Aleppo, Idlib, Hama Homs, and Damascus. But beyond Damascus, in the south, they want a demilitarized zone, so Jolani cannot move his forces to the south of Damascus. And they want to present themselves as the protector of the minorities in Syria after Jolani unleashed his genocidal army against the minorities. And that's why Laura Loomer was in Israel meeting with minority groups in Israel and saying that we cannot live with Jolani because in the strategic thinking of Israel, they want for Jolani to control the Sunni-dominated regions, but the regions which are not dominated by the Sunnis, they want to have certain leverage over them, and especially over Essaouira, where the Druze live, and in the eastern shore of the Euphrates where the Kurds live, and also over the Alawites. So Laura Loomer basically is doing Israel's job nowadays in Israel. And she didn't go to Syria and ask what the Syrian people want. She went to Israel reporting about the Jolani meeting with Trump. And I find that really dishonest by her, because if she was honest, she should mention, for example, that the soldiers and the militants of the Jolani army, they used to go to Israel and receive medical treatment in the Israeli field hospitals. And the former head of Mossad confessed that on Al Jazeera, that yes, we receive them and we give them medical treatment out of humanitarian reasons, right? Because he says that Al-Qaeda has never attacked Israel in the past. And I'm not asking, I'm not calling at all for violence or calling for Al-Qaeda attack against Israel, but it's a question mark, right? Al-Qaeda attacked everyone in the region except for Israel. Why is that? That's a big question mark. Why Al-Qaeda never attacked? And I'm not calling for attack, so nobody would understand me wrong.
No, but you bring up a great point. And one of the questions I had was really, is why do you think that none of the pro-Israel voices, the neocon pro-Israel voices, the same people who lecture us daily about, you know, Islamic terrorists invading the United States, like, I haven't said a word about this. They seem to be pretty quiet about this. And yet when we call, you know, we're calling out the Christian. I mean, you're born in Syria. You're a Christian. As we talked about in the intro, one of the strongest Christian countries in the world, until it's overrun by, by people killing Christians and Alawites and Druze and everything else. So why have they been so quiet on this point, do you think?
Clayton, I've been thinking about this for a long time. I've been thinking, and I was really all the time shocked why American politicians, European politicians stood on the wrong side in Syria. I was always asking myself, where is the Vatican, for example? Where are the churches in the world? Why aren't they saying something about this? Where are the leaders in the US? And I come to the realization that they are anti-Christian forces. There are anti-Christian forces. They are planning on eliminating the Christian presence in the Middle East, especially that those Christians do not align with the Christian Zionism, the ideology that they have created among the evangelicals in the United States in order to sell the illusion that there is this Judeo-Christian alliance and that we have to stand with the state of Israel for us to be blessed. Like for God to accept us, we have to bless Netanyahu, we have to bless Ben-Gavir. And that's a heresy, that's a wrong perception of Christianity. So they ethnically cleansed basically 90% of the Christians in Iraq and in Syria and also from Palestine. And they are normalizing the Christian Zionism among also whoever is left in Syria, because these people nowadays are very vulnerable and they need anyone to come and save them. Imagine that Jolani attacks a town, and this town is a Christian town, and he's capable of completely genociding them, and then Israel comes and says, I'm your savior, I'm going to protect you. And at gunpoint, many people choose to be with Israel, and this is what happened, including buying many influencers. I know it myself, because I was approached by an Israeli who claims to be a private person after the regime change happened, and he said, look, the regime change is done, you were fighting to keep this regime, and this regime is gone, and we have now a mutual enemy. Let's cooperate, and we will support your work on Syriana analysis, and you will become very influential on social media platforms. They offered me personally, so, and I
wait,
know...
Wait. Israel came to you and said now...
The Israeli person came to me, and he said that he is a very rich Israeli person who has lots of companies, and he offered me support for my channel, Syriana Analysis.
To support Jolani?
No, to support the idea that Israel has to be the protector of the minorities in Syria, so that I would be normalizing Israel presenting itself as a protector of the minorities in Syria. Because I'm influential on X, and I have a big following, and many Syrian Christians, for example, also watch my content and follow what I write on X. So they wanted to capitalize and invest in my work.
So in other words, as an Orthodox Christian, maybe we should convert to a form of sort of Christian Zionism now, because Israel is my protector. And here's Kevork out on social media. He's really pushing this idea. You know, maybe I should start to think about supporting Christian Zionism. Like, it's unbelievable.
I was invited to Israel by him. He said, when you come to Israel, you will see that the situation is not like you think it is. And I know he says that you are not an anti-Semite, so we would accept you. So the only thing that he wants is to tone down my criticism of Israel. And my criticism of Israel comes based on my perception that Israel is wrong on collectively punishing everyone for October 7, for example, in Gaza, despite my differences and disagreements with many of the groups fighting against Israel. And I think that the trigger for the regime change war in Syria was not by the U.S. itself, but by the neocons and the Zionists in the United States convincing the planners in the U.S. that this regime change war has to happen, and then we have to balkanize the country, Syria. And this is what is happening, ongoing, as we speak nowadays. I ask many people, including a former Marine veteran, who is also a regular guest on your channel, Scott Ritter, for example. He says, I can't think of anything else but Israel. Israel is the reason why they started this war, because Syria posed a threat for the dominance of Israel in the region, and it was aligning itself with Iran and other actors in the region who used to pose economic and security threat or challenge, let's say, for the absolute Israeli dominance over the region. But once the regime change war happened, I think now the region is mostly revolving around Israel, and everybody is running after normalizing ties with Israel. It's the Abraham Accords, and it's only a matter of time until Jordan also joins the Abraham Accords, but there are steps, you know, they have to first strike a security deal, and then you will see, for example, does anyone in the United States thinks that this congressman who received Jordan, his name is Brian Mast. Like, Brian Mast is beyond Israel first, right? He wears an IDF uniform inside Congress. Like, is there anyone who thinks that Israel would object the visit of Jordan to the United States? And if the Israelis objected his visit to the United States, would Brian Mast receive him? That's impossible. So I think Jordan has already presented his cards, that he's ready to join the Abraham Accords, and it's only a matter of time until Syria becomes its entirety revolving under the American umbrella. And this was, unfortunately, an outcome that many people wanted to avoid. Not that we don't want relationship with the United States, in the contrary, but we want friendly relationship with the United States and not the master and slave relationship. You know, we wanted to preserve the sovereignty of the United States and keep good relationship with the U.S., and with the other regional and international powers. We don't have any problem with the United States. The United States is 10,000 kilometers away from us. People right. think that the Middle Eastern people hate the United States. No. I grew up on American pop music, on hip-hop music. I watched Hollywood movies. I have never had any bad sentiments toward American culture or American products, right? But we wanted to preserve our dignity. We wanted to stay in our homes. We wanted to preserve our national economy, and everything is gone nowadays. So unfortunately, it's like the WEF when they say you will own nothing and you will be happy, and you will see all these people celebrating in the streets the demise of their nation. It's an unfortunate truth, but they have propagandized the people so much that they think now they are free. But I think that they have put the chain in the neck of Jordan and Syria, especially with this IMF now deal. And whoever comes next in Syria, they will be forever in debt. And that's the economic hitman playbook. Hmm.
What does this mean? I'll get you out of here on this, Kvorak. What does this mean for the so-called war on terror? I mean, was it ever about fighting terrorism at all? I mean, when we have a terrorist literally meeting with President Trump this afternoon and all the sacrifice of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, or was the idea of fighting the war on terror just an idea just for weaponizing it for the United States and Israeli interests, wiping out world leaders, regime change? What does it mean?
It was a great opportunity and an excuse for the U.S. and the Zionists, the neocons in the U.S. to expand their influence in different places around the world, one of which is in Central Asia, because they wanted to establish a base in Afghanistan, and then they moved into Iraq, Syria, and they wanted to knock out Iran as well. So they wanted to establish an absolute hegemony over the region. And this is a very vital region, energy, trade routes, etc. And I think the war on terror, I don't think that most of the people who joined Al-Qaeda were assets for the CIA or any other planners in the US. They thought really that they're fighting against the US. But on the leadership level, for example, the Jolani, Baghdadi, Osama bin Laden, like, it makes no sense. Like, one of the very close trustees of Osama bin Laden, his name is Ahmad Zeidan, and they used to have pictures together in Tora Bora and in Afghanistan. Now he's the advisor of Jolani. And Jolani was the leader of Al-Qaeda. It's like I'm watching a dystopian world. Movie. I'm watching a dystopian movie, and unfortunately, it makes a mockery of this war on terror.
Well, in 2023, how quiet everyone is. Everyone flipped out about Mamdani becoming the new mayor of New York, you know, mayor of New York City. And I saw all of these like MAGA influencers all saying this is the biggest slap in the face to the families of 9/11, victims of 9/11, et cetera, et cetera. But they're quiet when there's literally a terrorist meeting at the White House with President Trump. They're totally quiet about that.
There is something important about Mamdani, by the way. Mamdani is a very liberal person. He's not even an Islamist, right? He goes into the LGBT demonstrations. His wife is a Syrian, and she supported this regime change operation in Syria. And once the regime change happened and the spree of killing started against the minorities, now she's silent about it. Why is that? Why are they silent about all this killing happening in Syria once the regime change happened? But you're also right about the Zionists freaking out about Mamdani. It's a joke. Why would they be afraid of Mamdani and not by Jolani? Jolani is a mastermind behind car bombs in Iraq. This guy has been planning and constructing car bombs and sending them into Shia neighborhoods in Iraq in order to start a civil war. He has lots of blood on his hands. He's soaked in blood. But I feel really sad because I'm Syrian. Seeing Jolani is the representative of my country and meeting with Trump. And unfortunately, this meeting will embolden his grip in the country, and only the people in Syria will pay the price. But Trump seems doesn't care about that. And whoever is advising him, they think that they can keep Jolani on a leash.
I'm trying to think what it would be like in the United States. What would be a comparable person to ascend to the presidency that you have in Syria? You have a terrorist as the president. You know, I would think like maybe like Mike Pompeo, or I was thinking like somebody evil who kills people for a living. Like, you know, I don't know. Like
Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah, right. I don't know. It's just awful. No wonder
those people in the U.S. They just have big mouths, my friend. Like, they give orders to other people to kill. Jolani himself killed people. This guy was on the ground and committing heinous acts, and now he's acting like he's a civilized person, wearing nice watches and
wearing
suits. And he ran on the platform of saying. He said, "Dear Mujahideen, after Damascus, we are marching to Jerusalem and we're going to liberate Palestine." And once he reached to Damascus, he went to the White House to meet with Donald Trump.
They're like, you're not going into Palestine anywhere. No. You're our puppet. Boy. Kavor, great to see you as always. Thank you for your analysis as usual. And, it deeply, deeply disturbing. There's no one I'd rather talk to about this. So thank you so much, as always. Great to see you, Kavork. Thanks for staying up late for us over there. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Clayton and Natalie. Just quick thing. Kimchi is great, by the way. It's great for the gut health. And most of the diseases comes from the gut. So if you eat kimchi, we eat it a lot here in Germany, your gut will be so much better.
I know. And Kavork is quite a health nut, by the way, as well. So he knows this stuff. Great to see you, Kavor. Thanks so much. Stay safe, my friend.
Thank you so much, my friend. You too.
All right. What do you guys think about that? It's crazy. I mean, how do you guys have a guy like this in the White House? I just love the silence that you're hearing from, like, the Zionists. They're just, like, totally silent about this. Why? Because he's a puppet of Israel, and he's a puppet of the United States. And so he's being used, of course, to do their bidding. So that's why they're totally silent about this, but they're furious about Mamdani. You have an actual ISIS, Al-Qaeda terrorist in the White House who's killed people, who's fought against American soldiers. Like, what a slap in the face to these U.S. men and women in uniform who fought against these guys for so many years, who have brain trauma, PTSD, who've lost limbs as a result of fighting these guys. Now we're partnering with them. But see, the joke all along is that we created them in the first place and we funded them in the first place many years ago. It was a creation of ours anyway. Just like Hamas is a creation of Israel and the United States. And we armed them. The United States armed Hamas. They had one gun. That's it. One. Until we gave them weapons. Because you need a bad guy. You need a bad guy to carry out your nefarious plans.
Well, and you know it was intentional because Israel monitors every single thing that goes in and out of Gaza. Everything. So those weapons were approved.
They know exactly. I mean, Netanyahu's on the record talking about creating Hamas. So, you need, it's like the Wizard of Oz, right? You need to have that bad guy. People can rally around a bad guy. When you create Hamas and then you stand down and allow them to attack you, it's a brilliant strategy. So,
well, they aren't going to get to build those condos otherwise.
Right. Graham Rempel in our chat says, buy gold and silver and Bitcoin since inflation is going to rise. Yeah, they play both sides. Exactly. Someone else says America will eventually break apart. That's a given. Gimas says, Princess Dumbarton says Mark Levin is one nasty effer. Moomha says, you think Ben Shapiro hasn't been calling Tim Pool and Group Incorporated? I don't know. Daybird says, I love kimchi. I discovered it when I was stationed in Korea. I know Kim, man, they have kimchi in all of their food over there. Free speech is dead. Tuned in from the UK. Hi, everyone. Good to see you. Let me see on the other super chats that we have here.
Also, that poll's up if you want to read the results of the poll.
So the poll we asked earlier was, do you think a 50-year mortgage is a good idea? 87% of you said, no, it's not. 13% said, yes, it is. I mean, the thing is, the only way that a 50-year mortgage is good is if you have the financial education and wherewithal to get out of it as quickly as possible. Like I said, Natalie and I wrote a book on how to pay off your mortgage in 5 years. It's a best-selling book if you'd like to check it out. But it's short. You can read it in about, it's like 100 pages long. But like, you want to get that mortgage down as quickly as possible because that amortization schedule is so massive. And then, of course, you're paying that much more in interest. You're doubling or even tripling the amount of interest you're paying over the life of that loan. So if you have a plan going into it where you know you're going to take this like cheaper interest rate, lower monthly payment, and then you're going to like sock money away so that every month you're firing a lot of money at the principal balance and you're getting it paid off in like 3 years or 4 years. Great. But most people aren't going to do that. At all. It's kind of like the, you know, it's like payday loans. It's like it's going to hurt people significantly. They're going to get locked into these loans for 50 years. They'll never own the house at all. They'll just pay the bank twice as much money. So all the Wall Street people are going to allow more money.
Yeah. And it's also the value of the home's not going up because you paid more for it. So like if you buy a $500,000 home, you pay $800,000 interest on top of it. It's not like the house is now worth $1 million. So if you try to resell it, you basically paid more for the same thing.
Why not rent? Because then you don't have a mortgage to deal with. You don't have all of the stuff that comes with owning a home. I have to fix everything. I have to take care of all these things. It's not a performing asset at all. So why not just rent at that point? You know, I have a lot of real estate investor friends who actually rent the home they live in, but then they own like 50 properties that they rent out. The home they live in is a rental. So, yeah. Bunker Bill says the 50 years will give you the cheapest rate for borrowing, so you take the cheapest rate and pay it off real quick. Exactly. But most people aren't going to do that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. What I'm wondering is, could it actually be an advantage because you would get a lower monthly payment so that you're able to put more towards the principal?
That's the thing. Most people, so a 15-year mortgage, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong in the chat room, unless it's changed recently, usually like a 15-year mortgage, you have a lower interest rate. You have and the 30-year mortgage, I think you have a slightly higher interest rate. Am I wrong about that? Maybe someone can check my math on that. I think it used to be the case So the idea is you would get a 15-year, your monthly payment is higher. I think your interest rate is lower, but then you still want to try to pay it off as quickly as possible. All that to say, my point is that most people aren't going to do that. Almost no one is going to do that. They'll get the 50-year and they'll just make the monthly payment every month, and they're not going to pay more. The whole point of doing it that way is that so I don't have to pay more. So my monthly payment will be less, but I'll pay it off in 50 years when I'm 90. And then I'll own the home when I'm 90 years old. Okay. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a financial product. So if you're financially intelligent, you can figure out how to actually use this product to your advantage. So yes, you could do a refinance, or so you could figure out what to do with it if you knew how to target and pay down the principal balance.
Do you ever actually own it? Because if you pay off your house and you miss your property taxes or something in a year, can they not take it from you?
They can take your home in a year if you don't pay your property taxes.
Yeah. So you go to tax auction.
Your house will go to tax auction real fast. Like if you don't pay your property taxes, your house will go to tax auction real fast. So that's what will happen. I mean, I bought raw land through a tax auction before because it just reverted to the county because the person stopped paying taxes on it. And the government's like, sorry, you don't own that land anymore. And so they don't get their money back. Like the county is not sending them a check. Like, hey, we know you paid 20 grand for this piece of land. Here's a check for that 20 grand. We know it didn't work out. No, sorry, you just lose it. You just forfeited that. And now the county owns your land. So, you know, that's the thing. That's what Ron DeSantis is trying to do in Florida right now, which is eliminate property taxes, which I think is great, because then you'd actually own the land and you own the property and the government doesn't own it. You're not paying rent to the government in perpetuity. You're not actually owning anything. I'm just kind of curious here. 15-year mortgage rate right now. Just want to see what the rates are. So about as of November 10th, so as of today, the 15-year is about 5.5%. 5.5%. Okay. And what is the 30-year today as of November 10th? 30-year mortgage rate is, what is today's rate? Yeah, 6.5%. So yeah, getting a 15-year mortgage is about 1 percentage point lower. So about 5.5% versus 6.5% interest right now. It depends on where you're going because you can get some, you know, different rates and it depends. But basically 5.5 up to about 5.94% for a 15-year. And a 30-year is about 6.5%. So just a little bit more. So that idea is that, hey, I've got less time to pay it back. The banks aren't going to make as much because I'm not paying it for 30 years. I'm paying it for 15. But my suggestion would be, hey, you know, get whatever low interest rate you can and then fire as much as you can of the principal balance separate, like write a separate check per month to that principal balance so you can pay it off in like 2, 3, 4 years. I mean, the book that I wrote with Natalie is called How to Pay Off Your Mortgage in 5 Years. Here's the book. It's on Amazon. You can find it there. But, you know, because what you're really doing is you're targeting the time. It's time, you know. You've got that whole amortization schedule for 30 years. Like it's not changing. The only thing that changes it is you firing an amount at the principal balance. And that's how you can completely alter that in calendar. So anyway, that's my recommendation. Yes, you pay your property taxes as long as you own your home. Exactly. Now, again, that's why it's amazing. If they can do that in Florida, I would love to see them pull that off. So shouldn't people have that option, Will Young says. Yeah, I mean, you have an option. You can do 15, 30. You can do 10-year mortgages. I think in Europe, when we lived there, we had a 30-year, I think. But I think they offered 40-year mortgages in Europe. What's hilarious in Europe, by the way, to get a mortgage, like, you have to be fit. Like, you cannot be morbidly obese or have any kind of major health issues. Like, they will not give you a mortgage. You got to literally go to the hospital and run on a treadmill. And they'll do blood tests, everything. Like, they want to make sure that you can pay this thing back.
Like, sorry, your fat ass is homeless.
I mean, if you're like, seriously, if you're wildly overweight, you're going to have to run like 2 miles on a treadmill, like up, they like put the thing like uphill. Like,
wow.
I mean, I don't know how some people, and like so many people smoke, you know, like.
They should do that before you get McDonald's here in America.
Oh, man. Claudio in our chat room says, Clayton, average house price here in Vancouver, British Columbia is $1 million. You need at least 20% down. Most houses on the market for $2 million. How do you pay off 1.8 in 5 years? Well, I mean, there's so in the book, we talk about a couple of different strategies, one of which is that you can actually use a home equity line of credit. So if you've got some equity in your home, what you're trading is two different financial products. That's how we paid it off in 5 years. By the way, I was so fascinated by this. One of my best friends growing up, he got a perfect on his SATs. Okay. He's a math actuary. Like, he's that brilliant. He, a few years ago, told me, because he bought a house in the east, up east somewhere in Rhode Island, I think. And he said, I bought your book. And he said, not joking you, to the day, we're paying off our house in 5 years using the strategies. And I was just like, what? Really? You got a perfect on your SATs and you're using, you know. But because, it, you know, the banks created this product that they don't want you to know about. They want you to think you're locked into this like amortization schedule for 30 years and you're not. The way to really shorten that amount is by firing a separate payment, whether it's once a month, once a quarter, once a year. I prefer doing it like once a month. So, you know, is to fire that extra principal payment to your principal balance on your mortgage, and you dramatically shift your amortization schedule. And you'll notice if you actually build a spreadsheet, we actually give away a free Google spreadsheet in the book, but you plug in these numbers, it's remarkable, because you'll suddenly see the amount you're paying in interest once you make like an extra payment. You just see that whole calendar shift, and the amount in interest that you're paying to the bank just shifts dramatically. I love doing it. So,
just out of curiosity, would that work on a car as well? Like anything you finance?
No, not a car, because there's no amortization schedule on a car, right? As far as I know, right? You're just paying one lump monthly payment.
Right, but you can pay toward the principal every month too. If you put anything, like you can, if you make an extra car payment, yeah, because I used to make an extra and I would say apply the rest to the principal. So you can actually apply more to the principal each month that you pay over your payment.
Then, yeah. I mean, anything you're financing like this that puts you on a schedule that requires you to pay, because when you're buying a house, for the first like 8 years of owning the home, you're only basically making, every payment you make is just going towards interest. Like, you're not even paying on the principal balance at all. Usually in the first like decade, it depends on your house, but mostly you're not paying anything on principal. So the bank is making all this money up front by you just paying on the interest. By the way, and like in Europe, they don't even let you pay the mortgage off early. Like, you'll get a penalty. You can't pay it off early. So isn't that funny? But in the U.S., you can pay it off early. So my goal, like with this Vancouver situation, I mean, first of all, I mean, that's just, Vancouver is the most overpriced place in the entire world. So, you know, does it make sense to own a home at the end of the day? I guess I would even start there. Does it make sense to even own a house in Vancouver? Or are you better off renting something? Like, do you really want to live in a place that you're that overpriced for home values, where like 60% of your take home pay is going to pay a mortgage? Like, that might be a place where you're like, yeah, maybe I need to move. I mean, just being honest with you, like, I would never move to California for that reason. Just the home prices are so out of whack.
Well, and imagine what the rent prices are on those properties.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, I guess. I know one of my best friends lives in Vancouver, so I know a lot about this. We were just talking this morning, actually. He said, like, the home that his parents had in Vancouver that they sold a number of years ago, they sold for like $400,000. That same home now, if they just would have held on to it, they could have sold for $2 million. Like, that's how inflated everything has gotten in Vancouver. But the principles apply no matter if it's a multi-million-dollar home or a $400,000 home. The same principles apply. Like, you can use different financial products. So what I'm trying to say is that a home equity line of credit is different than a mortgage. They're two different financial products, and they operate differently. So you can actually leverage a home equity line of credit if you had it, if you wanted to get like a $10,000 home equity line of credit on your house. The beauty of, going off on this tangent, but I wrote a whole book about it. When you get a home equity line of credit, you start with a zero balance, right? So they basically give you a checking account. They give you like a credit card, you know, for your home equity, and you start with a zero balance. You don't have to use it. Usually home equity lines of credit last about 10 years. So you've got it. Now, what most people do with a home equity line of credit is they do stupid stuff. They go and buy a boat, or they, you know, maybe they do some renovations on the house, which I'm not a big fan of, because then you're putting that same money back into the house. And it's kind of a, but what if you could use that equity to actually buy a performing asset? Now you're bringing in cash flow from the equity in your house, right? So, because you can't eat equity. So you're living in a home that's not a performing asset. It's not performing. Unless you have a room that you're renting out, like an Airbnb or something, but you live in it. So it's actually not a performing asset. It's an asset. It's not a performing asset. So if you've got a home equity line of credit, let's say you get one for like $10,000 or 20 or 30 or 40, whatever. They usually give you like a loan-to-value ratio of like 80% loan-to-value ratio on the house, right? So let's say you get $10,000. I'm just trying to think small numbers. And you've got this 30-year mortgage over here. You could take that $10,000 home equity line of credit, max it out, and write a check to the principal balance of your primary residence. To the principal, not your normal payments, but to the principal. Now you've knocked $10,000 off the principal balance of your primary home. Yes, now your home equity line of credit is now at $10,000. You've maxed it out. But the way that we structure it in the book is you actually monthly, you start paying it out of your paycheck. You pay this home equity line of credit back down to zero. And then you rinse and repeat and fire another $10,000 at this thing. And before you know it, you've had this thing paid off because you're making all of these additional principal payments. And before you know it, it's paid off. So obviously, if you've got a multi-million dollar house, maybe want to increase that initial payment. But it just depends on how you're playing with these numbers. So, but there's a whole bunch of different strategies that you can use on doing this. But the bottom line is the banks don't want you to know this because they make a lot of money if you keep a mortgage for 30 years. They make the most amount of money. They're making double their money, triple their money. And now a 50-year mortgage, they're making an insane amount of money with this. So anyway, sidebar, side tangent, but that's how this works. All right. Dan Lynn says, go live with the Bigfoot. Hope you like stress, but the rent's cheap.
They stink, though, really bad.
I've heard that. Rainbow Unicorn Pony says you can use a HELOC to buy assets as long as you make over the interest paying on the HELOC. So the HELOC 6%, but you can make 12% and you net 6%. Yeah. Now, back in the day, home equity lines of credit had a much lower interest rate. So now we're dealing with higher interest rates on home equity lines of credit. I get that. So you just got to make sure the numbers make sense, right? Before you start buying these or taking these different financial products out. It's all math. But remember that a home equity line of credit is just totally different than a mortgage. They're just two totally different financial products. And the way that I like to think about it is using one of these financial products to attack the other one because they're differently structured. And that's the sort of the secret in how to do it because you're going after that principal balance. So thank you guys for your comments. Anything else? All right. So do I have anything else to hit today, Philip, or am I all good? Yeah, we're all good.
Yeah, that's all good.
Yeah. Check out our website. By the way, if you're interested in financial education, you know, that's one of the things I'm really passionate about. I've started multiple businesses. I've been an investor for many, many years. And of course, I'm passionate about this stuff. So on our website, if you go to redacted.inc, sorry, we've got some construction out here. I apologize for the circular saw, but redacted.inc. And then when you go there, click at the top, you'll see there's a top bar up at the top that start investing. So it's like a tab that'll kind of take you through all of the ways to start investing and learning about all of these things and how to build financial intelligence. I think it's one of the things that, first of all, they don't teach it in schools, how to build financial intelligence. But it, to me, it's the key to protecting your family, because everything we teach you is like outside of Wall Street, outside of how they all make money. It like, it gives you the full control. So all of the ways in which everything is redacted, and they don't want to teach you this stuff. They want you to just buy a 401k and make Wall Street rich. And we try to teach you how to do it yourself, where there's no middleman and you keep all the money. So that's what I'm passionate about. Anyway, check that out on the website. We have a whole redacted invest section that we built out. So please check that out. Hey, we'll be back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. And we will be live at that time. So thank you guys so much for subscribing and being a part of our community here. And we'll see you back here tomorrow. Have a great night, everyone.